as a writer and we are trying to do as a duet when we get together is create some kind of compassionate emotional response to whatever it is we're talking about. And I think specifically for writers, for poets, especially in this day and age, how many thousand years have people been saying that? The attempt to try to be honest about stuff is so important, and it's so, I mean, listen to, well, you know, I keep thinking, here I am in a different country, and what is it like to live in a country that isn't the world's bully? Where we come from, newspeak or deliberate distortions of the truth, whether you want to talk about the axis of evil or whatever George has thought up this week to talk about, it's a manipulation of language for ends that I, you know, just can't stand. I think writers need to try to be as honest and straightforward about life and their situation in life and as they possibly can be. And that act in itself is a revolutionary act. I think what drew William and I together originally and sustains us is that we both have a deep commitment, I think, to our art being directly connected to the people and the, mm-hmm. and the community and the welfare of both.
I wanted to, I mean, since, of course, 1945, there's been the idea that the use of language for its sometimes obscene purposes, propaganda and the lies of the state and what now, have made it much more difficult to communicate. And I imagine the same thing exists within the realm of music as well, is that the great cliches of pop and the commercialization and the globalization of that industry have made the very tools useless in some extents. But how do you all confront that problem, or do you view it as a problem?
You just got to keep on keeping on. I don't. I mean, in the face of popular music or popular writing or whatever it is, I mean, Jacqueline Suzanne or whoever, whatever the Canadian equivalent of this, of someone like that. I mean, obviously, you contact and you touch the people you contact and you touch. And as frustrating as it is sometimes, I think you have to be committed to reaching out and trying to touch and touching those people that you possibly can, and not sort of pissing and moaning all the time about what, you know, the smallness of your audience or whatever.
And what did, I mean, you of course have devoted your life to pushing the envelope of musical expression of the, do you feel that that work is becoming is hindered or oppressed by the a music which is becoming less able to communicate?
Well, I mean, I've always said that you know, the salvation for the music is in the people who don't listen to the music, because there are more of them, and you always would like to have it where your music available to people, where it's not underground, where if it were given a chance, like above ground on a regular radio and played at the frequency that pop music is played, that people would enjoy it and would indeed respond to it. But we haven't been given that chance yet. So we sort of have to not be happy with what we've been given. You always want a bigger audience. You always want to reach more people, because you know, sometimes it seems like there are more people against us than for us. But you play again. I think that the music is keeping the. I mean, just on one level, it's keeping the planet balanced. And I think if you told all the musicians in all the countries in the world, don't play any music today, you would see a dark cloud over the earth. And if you told people, just don't do anything good today, you know, think your most evil thoughts, you know, I think the planet might explode. So I think on that level, whether we play by ourselves in a room and no one's listening, the vibrations that the music is sending out, the vibration of the song, is keeping the planet balanced. It's the reason that the trees don't just get up and walk away.
Yeah, especially the two of us and the other artists in America, I mean, we have to write more poems and play more music right now to try to counteract what's going on in Washington.
Poet David Budbill, and multi-instrumentalist, not only bass player, both cultural workers committed and experimenting in a wide range of forms, David, from novels and plays to poetry, and William Parker, from The Secret of the Bass and the Rhythm to from Going from Time to the flutes that he's performing here today with melodies. They'll be performing as part of this wonderful festival that started on the 3rd of June, running till the 23rd of June here in Montreal as part of the Casa del Popolo's Suni per el Popolo. And Saturday, today, June the 8th, down at Casa del Popolo, located at 4873 Boulevard Saint-Laurent here in Montreal, they will be performing. And part of a piece that we just heard, they'll be playing the more extended version of Songs for a Suffering World. I wanted to know, your first collaboration together was called Zen Mountains, Zen Streets, a duet for poet and improvised bass. Last question in terms of this balance and this beauty and the role of music and how the two of you came together. I noticed, William Parker, that on your latest quartet, William Parker Quartet, Raining on the Moon, featuring Lena Conquest, wonderful record that somebody let me listen to just recently, there's a song called James Baldwin to the Rescue. And I see that, I guess that from that words and the power of words to influence music or inspire music, might mirror. This is my question. How do the both of you, as coming from different angles, see the interplay of music and words coming together? How do you see those vibrations being shared? What's specific to each, and how do they? What are the challenges of melding and working together, basically?
Well, you know, David was a musician and still is a musician. You know, he played the trumpet and saxophone and shakuhachi and other things. And before I was a official musician, I used to write, and I still do write. So there's a connection there, just there with you know, words that I might write and sounds that David might make, that sort of help thread things together. And words have always been, you know, they're intricate to people's lives, because I mean, it's just obvious with I love you, on down to you know, get up and let's keep on moving, you know.
You know, I think, I mean, poetry and music are only recently separated in this century almost, or the last couple centuries. I mean, the Book of Songs, which Confucius put together from folk poetry from 3000 BC up to about 500 BC, is called the Book of Songs because they're all songs. I mean, they're poems, and we read them now as poetry, but they were sung. I mean, so that the connection between poetry and music is so intimate and so close. And also, as a writer, I mean, poets, I think, are people who are interested in the rhythm of the language, the music the language can make. And also, I should mention that in this piece that we're doing tonight, there's a passage that William wrote. So we go back and forth between. Oh, not to mention the fact that there's numerous songs that William sings or we sing together that are lyrics that tunes that William wrote the music and the lyrics for both. So there's lots of William's words in this thing. But I just think that for me personally, the connection between words and music are so intimate. And I do. I mean, I play a musical instrument of some kind every day. And I do that because it's an intimate part of being a writer or being a poet. I mean, I'm not saying everybody should do that, but I need to do it. I have to do it. So I just, the connection between poetry and or music or words and music is so close, I can't for myself separate them at all.
Well then, I think we're going to listen to a piece from a selection from a shorter selection from Zen Mountains, which was your first collaboration on record together off Boxholder Records, released in 1999. That is poet and musician and creator David Budbill, joined also by William Parker. Zen Mountains and Zen Streets. We'll be back after this brief identification. CKUT 90.3 FM.
Hi, this is Kylie of Kylie and Dub Incorporated. You listen to CKUT, the greatest and most crucial radio station in all of Montreal, and maybe Canada.
That's true.
The selection I thought we'd play is a shorter one. It's part five, What Brings You the Most Joy, from William Parker and David Budbill. They're performing tonight at Casa del Popolo.
After reading Wu Yang Su's poem called Spring Walk to the Pavilion of Good Crops and Peace, it's beginning again. The Pavilion of Good Crops and Peace has decorated itself again. The hills are green. The garden is full of young shoots. The sun is high and warm. Already countless generations of wildflowers have gone to seed. I can hear music coming from the pavilion. It floats on the air, like apple blossoms falling, like spring birds singing in midair. The peas and beans, the young maple leaves, are singing warmth and peace, life to all that grows. But there is no peace. In 1961, I stepped onto Huff Avenue in Cleveland, Ohio, and saw a man lying on his back on the sidewalk bleeding. I saw another man standing over him. Then the standing man raised his foot and stomped it down on the other man's face. When he took his foot away, the other man's face was gone. The standing man wiped his shoe on the other man's shirt and walked away. This past May, a black man was drugged to his death behind a pickup truck. This past week, a gay man was pistol-whipped to death. Yet the music still comes, it floats on the air, the peas and beans, the young maple leaves will not quit singing. They will not give up their song. Thank you. They will not give up their song. Warmth and peace. Life to all that grows. What Issa heard. 200 years ago in faraway Japan, Issa heard the morning birds singing sutras to this suffering world. I heard them too this morning, which must mean, since we always have a suffering world, we must also always have a song.
A selection from Zen Mountains, Zen Streets, a collaboration from David Budbill and William Parker, whom we have the great pleasure of listening to, both music and words of wisdom. Our colleague from Dromotext, Fortner Anderson, is along for a ride on the mothership and orienting the discussion. And I'm going to hand the microphone back as we hit 3 on the PM side of things for this Saturday. You're listening to Funky Revolutions on the People's Power Station in Montreal. Fortner.
So we heard a cut entitled, What Brings You the Most Joy, from a double CD put out on the Boxholder label in 1999, entitled Zen Mountains, Zen Streets, a collaboration of David Budbill, poet, and William Parker on bass, a duet for poet and improvised bass, and an extraordinary recording. Now, if for those of you who might be interested in learning more about William Parker and David Budbill, I can refer you to the Where All Knowledge, All Human Knowledge is Held, the World Wide Web, and www.williamparkermusic.com or www.davidbudbill.com. Now, of course, we're very happy to have you all in the station today in advance of your show this evening at Casa del Popolo, your presentation of Songs for a Suffering World. Now, David, you live in Vermont, the back end of a long road off a small town. It's a recluse's life, and William, you're of course in the very heart of New York City, where the great all the foment of New York and its new jazz scene. How did you all ever meet?
Well, actually, Canada plays a major role in that, because I was subscribing to Bill Smith's Coda, that wonderful jazz magazine, which is kaput now. Is it no longer? I don't know. Anyway, and in the February-March issue of in 1986, there was an article about this young bass player named William Parker, and I actually dug it out, took a look at it last night. And there was something, it was an interview with him, and there was something in that, in his attitudes, not only toward music and art, but toward the world and toward society and toward the people, that really rang gongs in me, not even bells. And I wrote him a letter. I can't even remember how I found out how I got an address, but I wrote him a fan letter and sent him a book, and William responded and sent me a record. And this began a friendship that, and then we started trading books and records. And this was before CDs. Things developed from there.
An extraordinary meeting. One of the things that we talked about a bit earlier was what I took from what you were saying is that you are both involved in very spiritual projects, and that this is your work and its presentation to a public is active in the realm of the spirit, and I was, I guess, and William, you mentioned that you found the work was essential to your personal well-being, your personal survival. But I guess I wanted to go back and ask to touch that base again and to say, I mean, how do you, in this, how can the music and the work activate the spirits of those around us? How can it
affect people?
Yeah, affect people, the change. Perhaps we've gone over this all already, but I'm nonetheless facing this question of how art works in the world, and the spiritual quest. And so I'm wondering if we could talk a little bit more about the project of this, the spiritual project, which activates your art.
Okay. Well, eventually, the person who was sick on her bed began to move and began to react to this vibration that this one singer was singing out. And after another hour or so, the singer was really in a trance state and really singing out, and the person who was sick, not feeling well, began to get up off of her bed and dance. So that was the origin of the musician. Because before that, everyone sang, and it was just singing. But this person came above the chorus and became a soloist, and became a, what she could do was special. And you had the birth of a musician. So a musician is someone who basically has the power to heal people through sound. Okay, you call it a musician or muse, physician. Spirit Catcher, Shaman, but these people have the ability to, through their what they vibrate, to move people, and it gets inside of them, and they're moved. I mean, it's as simple as that. It's just like stepping out in the rain. When you step out, you get wet. You know, and that's just how it is. It's that simple, and that it's not complicated at all. And once it happens, you're changed for a life. I mean, it's with you your entire life, and you will always go to that source to be moved. It's like your new mother and your new father, and your newborn child. It really, really just changes your life. So once it happens, you don't even question it. You don't. You just really, your whole thing is just transformed into another light, and you just know exactly where it is, what's happening with it, and you begin to accept it. You know, like we have a record called Through Acceptance of the Mystery Piece, words by Kenneth Patchen, and that's what it's about. It's these kind of things, you don't really question it, you just accept it, and in accepting it, you begin to learn how the intricacies of exactly how it works. You know, that there are systems, there are tones you can play. Like when you know, you have a stomach ache, one can play a stomach ache rhythm. You have a headache, one can play a headache rhythm. So when you're playing, when I'm playing the bass, in the early days especially, I'm thinking of certain things that I'm projecting out into the audience, into the music. You know, like every note, every time I hit a certain note, I'm sending it out to the kids in India who aren't even hearing the music. You know, trying to uplift them, trying to heal them. It's like projecting the sound out there, projecting the meaning in the sound, in the words, in whatever art you're doing. And so that's kind of how the beginning stages of how it works for me that I'm aware of. And it just keeps growing out of that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, what I could add to that is that I lived in New York for many years. I love cities, but I live, as you know, Fortner, since you've been to our place, in an extremely remote place. It's 35 miles in any direction of the compass to a traffic light. I need that kind of silence and isolation in order to listen for the words coming to me from what I call the other side. And I mean, William would call it the sound stream coursing through the universe that he taps into and pulls down. But that kind of silence is where I am able to hear the words coming to me that make up the poems that I write. And so I guess that in terms of, I mean, that's one of the reasons that I, one of the reasons I live where I live. And it's the source of the wellspring of the stuff that comes to me.
Now, I'm hoping that you all will be able to do another a piece from the Songs for a Suffering World that you're going to do this evening at the Casa del Populo.
Well, we'll do the little beginning. Yeah. We have a little Buddhist prayer at the beginning that we'll, short little thing that we'll do.
Yo, this is Amadou from Positive Black Soul, and y'all listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal. Peace.
This is the way we open the program.
Hopefully something good will sing through me. Hopefully something good will sing through me. making the mystery clearer, making the mystery clearer. Hopefully something good will sing through me. Hopefully something good will sing through me. Making the mystery clearer, making the mystery clearer. Hopefully something good will sing through me. Hopefully something good will sing through me. Making the mystery clearer, making the mystery clearer. Touch the soil with my hands, touch the soil with my hands. Making the mystery clearer. Hopefully something good will sing through me. Hopefully something good will sing through me. Making the mystery clearer, making the mystery clearer. In the thicket, in the thicket, in the thicket, he lay in the thicket. In the thicket, in the thicket,
may
in the
I
thicket,
be peaceful
lay,
and happy.
He lay in
may
the thicket.
May I be healthy and strong.
Without food, without
may
shelter.
May I be free from fear.
Without food, without
may
shelter.
May I be filled with loving
in
kindness.
Thicket, in the thicket, in the thicket, he lay. He
may
lay
you
in the thicket,
be peaceful
lay
and
in
happy.
The thicket,
may you be healthy and strong.
With only the word.
May you be free from
making
fear.
Making the mystery clearer.
May you be
making
filled
the
with
mystery
loving kindness.
Clearer. Hopefully something
may
good.
May President Musharraf and Prime Minister
Vajpayee,
Ariel Sharon and
good
Yasser Arafat,
will sing through
George
me.
Bush
making
and Osama bin Laden,
making clearer. Making
Jean
the
Putin.
Mystery clearer.
May they all
touch
be
the soil
peaceful
with my
and happy.
Hands.
May they
making
be
the
healthy and
clearer.
Strong.
Making the mystery
may they
clearer.
Be free
hopefully
from fear.
Something good
may they all
will sing
may they
through
all,
me.
May they all
making the mystery
be filled with
clearer.
Loving kindness.
In the thicket, in the thicket, in the thicket, he lay in the thicket. In the thicket, in the thicket, in the thicket, he lay in the thicket. Without food, without shelter, without food, without shelter, in the thicket, in the thicket, in the thicket, he lay in the thicket, to live one day with only the word, making the mystery clearer, making the mystery clearer, making the mystery.
Thank you very much. So you all, tonight's show at the CASA begins at, doors open at 9, 9:30 will be an opening set, and then you'll come on and the show lasts, how long is the
Oh, I don't
song?
Know, a little over an hour.
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah.
Something like that.
It runs, and of course, tickets are $12 at the door at the CASA, a show not to be missed. One of the things William brought into the studio is a new piece, a private recording of a concert given entitled "The Distillation of Souls." And the Distillation of Souls. Where did this title come from?
This concert was, we did a series of concerts at a place called Quando, which is on 2nd Avenue near Houston Street, that the city actually will now has taken possession of. But it was an art center, and we did a show called Up From the Ashes, which was an artistic response to 9/11. And part of my program, I did a little over an hour-long piece called Distillation of Souls, and it was for the Little Huey Creative Music Orchestra and Kamunko, which is a Korean instrument like a koto. It's a precursor to the koto, and that was played by Jenny Kim. And it was just basically my reaction to one of my reactions to the events that happened, and to the temperament that was in New York at the time and the world, and also my reaction to the bombing of Afghanistan. So I think you're going to hear the very last section of the concert, and I think it features a Rob Brown on alto saxophone as a soloist.
On CKUT 90.3 FM from the private recordings of William Parker, Distillation of Souls.
No.
You will probably be doing exactly the same thing tonight at Casa del Popolo if you venture down for this special edition of the Suni per il Popolo Festival of Music. Today, William Parker and David Budbill, their collaborations, and they'll be doing songs for a suffering world, two selections of which we heard today. I wanted to thank the both of you for coming in. I wish you a great performance tonight. I wanted to thank Fortner Anderson for animating the discussion and for blessing the community with some performances. There's great versatility that we haven't talked about, both in your individual careers. One of the things in preparing for this program and becoming familiar with your collaboration, I listened to the disc a couple of times, Zen Mountain, Zen Streets. We heard one selection from there. One of the contents, lyrically, textually, is age, time, the seasons, the zen and balance of those things that you're able to talk about, from the marsh marigolds to the passing of the seasons. And I was wondering how the two of you collaborated on this broader question of time, and how the instrumental and musical aspects and concepts of time fuse together in improvisation and in collaboration, and how this, over this long line of life that isn't quite a circle that you describe in some of your poetry, how the two of you are able to deal with time and how that infuses itself in your work.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, it's really a mystery or a miracle or something, the way William and I work, because we get together to put these pieces together a few days ahead of the gig. Like, I think it was Zen Mountain, Zen Streets, we had 3 days. And William comes with, I got the text, or I got maybe 10 times as many poems as we're going to use. And William has this book after book after book of tunes that he's written. And we start just, I don't know what we do. We just start messing around. Is that what we do? And something evolves. I mean, this works, this doesn't work. Let's do this, let's do that. And slowly, over a couple of days, 3-4 days, we put the piece together. And then, of course, when we get on the road, it starts to change a little bit, maybe a lot. But I'm always amazed at what, when we put this early version of Songs for a Suffering World that we'll be doing tonight, when we did the early version last November, we got together, I think we had 2.5 days before our first performance, and it's really, I really don't know how it works. I mean, I can't answer the specific question about time. That's something that is a very deep interest of mine personally. I know that reading with William, I mean, when we go on the road together, then when we come off the road and he goes home and I go out and do solo readings, I mean, I feel like I'm just naked out there. I just hate it, you know. And that's one of the reasons I started to play those bowls, and I'm starting to play my shakuhachi a little bit, because it's so difficult after we've done our thing together, and with all this musical support and the way you can lay a line of words out across a line of music, and play against it or play with it or play above, or I mean before or after the beat or on the beat. I mean, just the way you can put those words with the music, I mean, it's so exciting, and it's tough to go solo after that, you know.
Yourself, how do you deal with the time element? Does, when you hear a poem of his talking about aging and death or time, and does that inspire something, or do you see relationships in your approach to music in terms of improvising or composing some of the music that you perform?
Well, I think, you know, the words, you know, call out, and the music seems to catch the word in mid-flight. And then it lands together. So, and that's sort of how it happens. It's not like a conscious thing. It's a very intuitive thing. It's almost like playing when you're playing a set of music, and the music is very fast, and you have to make second by second decisions that of what to play next, of where to move, of how to move your hands. And this process is just slowed down a little bit, but I think it's the same process. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're really doing a spontaneous landings and takeoffs, spontaneous inventions, alterations of color, and it comes from years and years of doing it, so that it's really second nature to know that, well, you don't do this, but use a subtler approach, because it's also like painting. You know, if you've got a white canvas, you don't want to use white because it doesn't show up. But if you just put a red dot here and a green, it comes out. And then if you have too much red and green, and you know you need maybe a little purple, a little yellow, but it's not, you don't really have the time to sit back for days and think about it. It really has to be done on the spot, because you really, because of economics, you don't have time. I mean, if you have like 6 months to write a piece of music, which you never have, I mean, at least I never have, in 6 months I can write I can write, like, you know, you can write 300 and you can write a piece a day, you know. So you're used to, in this music, to work very fast and to make big things smaller, and to make small things sound big. To really know how to take just a little bit of something and expand it. You know, how to use silence, how to take a little sound and mix it with silence, and it can last the whole piece. And how to blend very loud dynamics with soft dynamics, how to use combinations. I mean, one of the really things you learn to do is contrast, is that if you have two people or three people, they don't have to do the same thing. You know, if you're playing 4-4, I don't have to play 4-4. If you're playing fast, I can play slow. For every five notes you hit, I can play one note. Mm-hmm. For every one note you hit, I can play 10 notes if I want. So you have all these possibilities that take on a new logic. Okay, it's almost like if you look at, like, logic is the in realms of magic, logic is the lowest form of magic, okay? And the highest form of magic is totally illogical to us, but it works. So it's sort of like tapping into these sources, and you can begin to put things together in just very, very nice ways.
Yeah, I think when we're, even though we have a text and there's words written down on a piece of paper and we have an idea where we're going within those sections, every moment, this moment is, what happens in the next moment is determined by this moment. So that what William does or I do now in many ways determines what happens next, and then that determines what happens next, and in terms of rhythmic laying stuff out rhythmically. Go ahead.
I just wanted to add, and there isn't any one solution,
right? Yeah.
You begin with silence, and you're perfect then, right? Because you're and then you make your first sound, and then you're okay. Then you make your next sound, and then so it's almost like building an invisible bridge across a span. Doing this kind of thing, and so you have your next note or sound is very important in getting you across. But you have many, many combinations that will get you across, that will work. And so it's just like, which is a help, because it's not like you can, you only have like one thing that will work. Now, certain things will work better at that particular moment, but if you play it later on, it won't work. So that's also a challenge, when to say the right things,
right,
and how to say it. You know, right. If you have your text, which has its magic, but if you read it the wrong way, or you know, at one point, it won't work as well if you read it slowly the next time, or faster, or you let space in. So, but it makes it fun. It makes it you never get so that you're on top of it so much that. It's right. Not a, it's, you know, you feel it's a challenge. It's not a challenge. And it is always sort of surprises you.
Well, that's what makes this music, in my opinion, or this kind of art, more interesting than the popular music that we were talking about, because those people are always on top of it. They know exactly what's going to happen at every minute before they start. I mean, it's formulaic stuff, whereas this stuff is not. This stuff really does change from moment to moment. It really does. I had just one other thing, and that was that there's a section in the thing tonight about, in terms of time and death, there's a section of poems that I read, and William plays a pocket trumpet. Are you going to play that tonight? I never know. and they start out with a series of poems about meditating on your own death, and they work their way toward a kind of celebratory poem at the end. But I think it's so important to confront and your own death and to think about that, because that's what, to me, makes this life so precious and so valuable, and that's what also makes... you know, what's happening in India and Pakistan, or we Americans, not you Canadians, our war in Afghanistan, or the so-called war on terrorism, or what's happening in Israel and Palestine. It's what makes those things so achingly, painfully terrible, is that, I mean, we are here very, very briefly. And, you know, we're supposed to walk around and drink tea and make love and have fun. We're not supposed to be around shooting and killing each other. We're not supposed to do that.
Balancing the negative with the positive creative force of William Parker and David Budbill. They've been our guests, and our is Fortner Anderson, myself, Khalid, on Funky Revolutions. You're tuned to the People's Power Station in Mount Real, CKUT. Mr. William Parker and David Budbill are performing this evening at Casa del Popolo, 4873 Boulevard, Saint Laurent. For more information, in the 514-284-3804. Thank you very much for coming in, Fortner. Thank you for orienting the discussion and sharing some of the information that you know about their creative backgrounds much more than I do. So thank you for coming in. You're the host of Dromatext and Gray Matters, and the more lecture side for 1 hour, 7 to 8 p.m., Gray Matters, and then from 8 till 9 p.m., Wordsmiths from around the world, including David Budbill. So we'd like to invite you down to participate in SUNY Per Il Popolo. The festival runs till June 23rd. And once again, thank you. Good luck tonight. And
thank you. Thanks for having us in.
It was my pleasure. And just to remind you, the thing, the concert, the work that is presented tonight by Mr. Parker and Budbill is called Songs for a Suffering World. My name was Khalid. And in light of the joy, the celebration, and the discussion we've just had, Mr. Parker has a new record with his quartet featuring Lena Conquest. It's called Raining on the Moon. And I've selected Song of Hope to take us out. CKUT 90.3 FM, 3 and 35 on the PM side of things. DJ Andy Williams coming up next.
Who I love? I love Siddhartha Gautama, Jesus of Nazareth, and Confucius too. But mostly who I love is... I mostly love Lao Tzu.
because out of him rises 2,000 years of sweet melancholy and desire for this life.
Les vibrations de la communauté, CKUT FM 90.3. 90.3.
The following is a previously broadcast program.
Écoutez le magazine Dignité Noire, présenté par Mbayaji Mbayriway. Au sommet, cette semaine.
Bonsoir mesdames et messieurs, bienvenue à l'émission Dignité Noire sur CKIA 88.3 FM. Nous sommes le 6 juin 2022, je suis avec mon fidèle compagnon Brice. Brice, comment ça va?
Ça va et toi?
Un peu distrait.